Hello and welcome to the White House. My name is Macon Phillips, and I'm joined by Robert Gibbs, the White House press secretary, here in the Roosevelt Room at the White House. Just moments ago, the president finished his address to the nation just across the hall from the Oval Office, where he talked about the disaster in the Gulf. And all day long, we've been collecting questions from the public about that issue. So that Robert can answer some of those tonight and hear from perspectives across the country. We've done that through our YouTube page at youtube.com/White House. And what you're going to hear me ask tonight are questions from the top tier of questions as determined by members of the public. People voted on them, submitted their own, and we've seen thousands of people over the course of the day contribute. So the public certainly has an appetite for answers tonight. So let's get started. I'm going to start by going through the top questions from each of the categories, and then we'll dive into even more. The first one comes from Sarah in Lincoln, Nebraska. The U.S. recommends but does not require deep shore rigs in U.S. waters to have last-ditch emergency shutoff switches. Will this policy be changed in lieu of this disaster to be in line with many countries who require these switches?
Let me say first, thank you for your question. You heard the president in his speech, as Macon just said, given right across the hall just moments ago, discuss the national commission that he set up a few weeks ago to study a regulatory framework around deep water offshore drilling. Part of that review will be to study whether or not there are sufficient fail-safe mechanisms, the switch that you talk about that is required in countries like Norway that does deep water oil drilling, whether those should be adopted here in this country and be a requirement of further deep water drilling going forward. So I know the president is eager to hear from the commission about setting up a framework to ensure that what he had to speak about tonight is never repeated in our country's history.
Great. My next question actually comes from Toronto. But actually, we had a bunch of these questions on the topic from around the country, which is basically from Anthony, who asks, why has the government allowed BP to restrict media access to the Deepwater Horizon site?
Thanks, Anthony. I don't know the specific circumstances around the incident that you may be talking about, but Admiral Thad Allen, the National Incident Commander, who's in charge of the government's response to the BP Deepwater Horizon oil spill, reiterated a directive just a few weeks ago that all of our sites should have open media access. Obviously, within this, there are some safety zones, is what I would call them, around different hazardous points in the process. For instance, we do understand that oil is an exceedingly toxic and hazardous substance. You've seen people that are cleaning up the oil or tarballs on the beaches have to have training. They have to have hazardous materials gear. So there are some safety zones that are incorporated in this to ensure that everybody is safe from a very hazardous and toxic material. I can tell you this, the Coast Guard and the Joint Information Center, run by the National Incident Commander, has embedded over 600 reporters in different operations that have been conducted in the Gulf over the past 8 weeks. Admiral Allen regularly takes groups of reporters out with him, either on the water or in the air, to see the site around the Deepwater Horizon. And overflights are permitted by the FAA 2 days a week in order to ensure that the media has the perspective they need to cover this disaster. I will assure you that this president takes the notion of media access and transparency very seriously. We're not leaving this up to BP. This will be a transparent site.
Great. Our next question comes from Monica in Santa Monica, California, who asks, why haven't many supertankers been deployed to help vacuum up the oil already spilled? This method was successful in cleaning up 85% of the oil in the 1993 Saudi Gulf spill, according to former Shell President John Hoffmeister. Yeah. Why not do it now?
Well, I know this is something that the Coast Guard has looked into. Obviously, we're heading into the eighth week of our disaster and the response. I don't know the specific circumstances around the use of these different boats in the environment off of Saudi Arabia. But I know that each disaster site and its environment impacts the cleanup differently. That was true in Alaska for the Exxon Valdez, and it's definitely true in the Gulf. I can assure you that the Coast Guard has looked into different ways and different methods of dealing with the oil. We've already skimmed, burned, or absorbed millions of gallons of oil that have seeped from the Deepwater Horizon rig. Thousands of vessels of opportunity, a lot of them shrimpers or fishermen that can't make their livelihoods fishing anymore because the Gulf is closed, have actually been hired to skim oil away from beaches and valuable estuaries. And we'll continue to employ all of the latest technologies from here and overseas to ensure the best possible response to the BP Deepwater Horizon.
Okay. Our next question comes from Joe. Didn't give his location, but he asks, the Oil Spill Recovery Institute established by Congress in response to the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill receives over $300 million per year in funds to develop techniques, equipment, and materials for dealing with the oil spills. Where did this money go?
That's a good question, Joe. I am not familiar with that institute, but I can tell you this. One of the things that this president, again, has said is we need to understand and have a better regulatory structure around oil permitting. Each permitting plan has to have a disaster response plan. We now know that the disaster response plan for the BP Deepwater Horizon well was very insufficient. That's probably the understatement of the night, to deal with what's going on in the Gulf now. Just a few moments ago, you heard the president talk about his new nominee to oversee the regulatory structure that allows permitting for oil wells in this country. Michael Bromwich is a former inspector general and a former federal prosecutor, somebody who's made a career in reforming institutions. And probably more importantly than anything, he does not have a cozy relationship with the oil companies, something that has marked the permitting process at what was once known as MMS, or the Minerals Management Service. This president is committed to, once and for all, breaking the link between the oil industry and the regulators in government. We cannot and we will not, going forward, have the same people that cash the royalties checks be in charge of the safety inspections for rigs and for workers in the Gulf or anywhere off the coast of the United States.
Okay. Our next question comes from Ren from Evergreen, Colorado, who asks, 22 countries have offered their assistance. Why have BP and the U.S. government refused their help? Why are trained volunteers being turned away, especially those trained to help with wildlife and marine mammals?
Well, Ren, we have accepted help from countries all over the world and from, quite frankly, businesses, countries and businesses all over the world. We're using technology, we're using products from places like Denmark, Norway, the Netherlands. So we have asked for, and the world has responded in helping us. Just today, Admiral Thad Allen, again, our National Incident Commander, said publicly that he would waive what's known as the Jones Act, which prevents foreign vessels from doing the type of work, for instance, like this in American waters, that he would waive those restrictions if there were vessels that were needed in and around the Gulf to help with this recovery. So Admiral Allen and the President are committed to ensuring that any help that is offered that can be used. We're using boom from overseas, we're using vessels from overseas, and technology that we can and will take advantage of the gracious help of the people from all over the world.
Okay, our next question is actually a video from John Hosevar. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And the system said Grand Isle, Virginia, but this may be Grand Isle, Louisiana, based on the video. But we're going to try to cue it up here so you can watch. And Robert, you should look over here.
Louisiana, where we're seeing the true cost of our reliance on dangerous energy like oil in terms of coiled birds, dead fish, and communities struggling to survive. We're not going to hear the truth today from the big oil company CEOs lying to Congress, but can we count on the president to tell the American people the truth, that the only way that we're going to avoid disasters like this in the future is to end our reliance on fossil fuels and to shift to a clean and renewable energy future?
You know, thanks for the question. And before I give you an answer, I just want to say that on two of the president's four trips to the Gulf, we visited Grand Isle. We've heard the stories from those that make their living fishing in those waters. I heard the mayor tell a story on our first trip down there about having to put his own credit card out to make sure that fishermen could provide meals for their own families. And I think we've all been impacted by the heartfelt stories of the people like those in Grand Isle and all over the Gulf who have watched the way they make their living be destroyed slowly by BP's disaster and their response to the oil spill. Let me say, in terms of having the president tell the truth and ending our dependence on foreign oil, I hope you heard tonight the president commit once again to doing all that's in his power to pave the way for a clean energy future for our country. This president made some historical commitments in his first year to invest in solar and wind technology, to invest in real renewable industry. You know, during the campaign, we produced a video on the campaign, and it showed president after president after president going to Capitol Hill, standing in front of Congress, saying, "I'm going to be the president that reduces our dependence on foreign oil." And at the end of each one of those statements on the video, we put a number of how much our dependence on foreign oil had increased over the length of the term of that president. And I know the president well, and I can speak for him definitively on this. Barack Obama is not going to be the president that walks up one more time to Capitol Hill and discusses reducing our dependence on foreign oil. We really should do something about it this time. I've talked about our historical commitment to renewable energy. Barack Obama instituted and increased fuel mileage standards for the first time in almost three decades in his first year in office, and just a few weeks ago unveiled historic fuel mileage standards for heavy-duty work trucks, the first ever of its kind. We need to take some bold steps, and Congress needs to work with this president to take bold steps to break once and for all our dependence, as you said, on foreign oil and on fossil fuels, and make sure that the car that my son drives and the car that my grandchild drives isn't powered by something that has to be imported from overseas or drilled at 5,000 feet below the ocean, but is powered by the sun and the wind and the rain.
Okay, this next question jumped out from the system, and it, well, you mentioned your son, he mentions his, and you mentioned the campaign, and you'll see why that's relevant. It's from Jack in Louisiana, who asks, "I walked along an oil-soaked beach with my son yesterday. Do you have any idea how heartbreaking it is to see a 12-year-old boy pick up an oil-drenched fish and ask you, 'What is this?' I feel politicians don't have a real connection to the disaster."
Yeah. Well, Jack, let me say this. I was raised in Alabama. I spent weeks during the summer along the same beaches and along the same beaches throughout the Gulf that you and your 12-year-old son probably walked on a few days ago. During the very first weeks of this, my son said to me after we'd come back from the Gulf, "Dad, how are we going to plug that hole and how are we going to get all that oil out of the water?" We spent a few minutes talking about that stuff. I told him about the things that the president was doing. But I told him this, that it was going to be long and it was going to be hard, and he was going to be older when we'd finally cleaned up the environment and restored the Gulf to the health that it needs to be and the health that it deserves to be. Like I said to a previous question, I hope that the car that my son drives and the world that my son inherits is one that's not powered by fossil fuels, but by wind and by light, that we're not held hostage by the whims of dictators all over the world in jacking up the price of oil and wrecking our economy. I think, and I think the president believes, with his two young daughters, that one of the greatest gifts that we could pass to the next generation is an economy and a world less dependent on fossil fuels, less dependent on foreign oil, that's taken bold steps to finally break out of that, create an economy that's actually creating jobs for people here in America. I think that would be a wonderful gift to pass on to the next generation. But keep in mind this, we had a problem with fossil fuels and foreign oil long before this happened. But I hope that we look at the pictures of what's going on in the Gulf, to the animals, to the wildlife, to the environment, to the people, and rededicate ourselves to changing the way we live, changing the way we work, and taking the real bold steps necessary to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels.
Okay, this next question comes from Doug Dorner from Swedesboro, New Jersey, who asks, are we going to inspect all of the well platforms in the Gulf to make sure they have all the required emergency equipment to contain this type of disaster so we not see this again?
Yeah. Doug, it's a great question. The President and the Secretary of Interior ordered deep water inspections as soon as this accident happened. And as I said earlier, we've created a commission to study what happened and the type of regulatory structure that has to be in place going forward. I've heard the President sitting in this room with meetings, in meetings about the oil spill, say that fail-safe had to mean something. It had to mean that what we were doing was safe and that the technology that we employed to ensure its safety didn't fail. I know he means it. And I know going forward, we're going to have a real commitment to ensuring that that happens.
Okay, we're going to queue up our next video. That one, let's pull that up again. That one comes from Jim from the mid-Florida Gulf Coast. It's a little long, but we'll get through it here.
Mr. Gibbs, thanks for taking my question. The American people, creative, hard workers, and the situation with the oil leaves so many people out of work. Couldn't we put all of these people...
Well, I've got the description that you put in with it, so we'll give that a shot. We'll publish the video to the site tomorrow. Apologize for the technical glitch, but basically says we need an energy project similar to the interstate highway system that puts thousands of people to work and creates unlimited new opportunities for millions of Americans. What are we waiting for?
Yeah, look, that's a great question. Some people have likened what we have to do to break our dependence on fossil fuels to the Apollo project, to Kennedy saying that we have to go to the moon, we have to go to outer space. He didn't necessarily know how we were going to do it when he did that speech, but he knew that the ingenuity and the technology and the know-how of the American people would lead us that way. You heard the president tonight talk about manufacturing plants that have been closed because of our economic problems now opening up and instead producing wind turbines for windmills or producing electric car batteries. We're going to actually go from 2% of the world's capacity in electric car batteries to 40%, producing 40% of the world's capacity in only a short period of time because of some of the investments that we've made in renewable energy. And I've said this now a few times on these questions. I think no greater gift could be passed to the next generation than a dedicated commitment to reducing that dependence on fossil fuel, reducing our dependence on foreign oil, changing to a clean energy economy. And the one thing we know is as we transition to that clean energy economy, it is a tremendous opportunity to create jobs for people all over this country. Again, to build wind turbines, to build windmill blades, to build solar panels, all of the things that we need to transform our energy economy.
Okay, the next question comes from Whit Jones in Washington, D.C., who asks, in light of the spill, why do we continue to give big BP and other big oil companies billions in handouts? Shouldn't we be using that money to invest in a clean energy economy that could move us beyond oil and create a needed economic boost in the Gulf?
The president agrees with you. We have to end our subsidies for fossil fuels. We have to end our subsidies for big oil companies. We have to hold them accountable, which the president will do with BP. And we have to make an earnest investment in the type of clean and renewable energy that we know has the possibility to power our economy. We know this, that unless we make that commitment, it's hard for businesses to plan, it's hard for people to plan and have the type of assuredness that they need to invest in what's very expensive. But we do know this, what's even more expensive is tying our future to an energy source that we know isn't limitless, and tying ourselves to an energy source that's controlled by other parts of the world. I think the president was eloquent tonight in saying the greatest cost is the cost of inaction. We have a chance to act. We've had a chance to act for a long time. We should certainly act on it now.
Okay, and I actually just turned on a feature that allows us to look at some questions that have been coming in while you've been talking, and one that just came in that's been pretty popular since we've been speaking was asked by Rob Ferreria from Orlando, Florida, who asks, since BP has proven to be incapable to deal with the accident, will the proper authorities look into revoke BP's license to drill within the U.S.?
That's a good question. One of the things that the president did as we were reviewing the report that the Department of Interior put out 30 days after the accident was a decision that that we reviewed in the Oval Office on a Wednesday night before the president issued the report, because there were 33 deep water wells that had drilling permits in the Gulf and it were at some point in the drilling process. But the president told us that because we don't know what caused this accident, that we can't afford to continue drilling those 33 wells without knowing what happened. The president didn't feel comfortable moving forward. Now, in Louisiana, that's caused some economic pain, and the president understands that. But at the same time, we can't take BP's word for it that they have safety procedures that are in place to ensure that what happened 57 and 58 days ago doesn't repeat itself now. So the president actually paused the drilling permits that that were already in place and were already being drilled in order for us to take a look back at the types of safety procedures that we thought were necessary to have in place and to ensure that drilling was done safely.
Okay, the next question comes from James in Cleveland, who asks, how many years do you think it will take for the Gulf to become normal after this spill? Do you have any plans to counter the long-term effects of this oil spill?
Yeah. James, it's a good question. Obviously, we've got scientists from around the Gulf and around the nation that are looking at this even as we speak. We do know this, that for years, the environment in the Gulf has been declining, whether it was natural disasters or man-made disasters like this. We've seen wetlands and marsh degraded, destroyed. So we've got our work cut out for us, and we had our work cut out for us before millions of gallons of oil leaked into the Gulf. One of the things that's important is coming out of this, BP will be responsible for the damage that it caused to the environment. And what will happen is there will be what's called a natural resource damage assessment. After that assessment, a bill will be handed to BP for the money that they owe the American people for the damage caused in the Gulf. And you heard the president outline tonight by asking former Mississippi governor and current Secretary of the Navy, Governor Mabus, to begin the process of a long-term Gulf restoration plan to ensure that when those natural resource damage assessments come back, when the bill is given to BP and BP gives the taxpayers the money for the damage they caused, that we'll have a plan in place to spend that money on restoring the beauty, the vitality, and the gorgeous ecosystem that we all know as the Gulf of Mexico.
Great. Well, that's all the questions we're going to take tonight. But we'll be answering some more tomorrow. We'll pull together some of the policy officials who have been working on this issue and try to pick off some more questions that were voted up. I want to take a moment and thank the good folks at YouTube, the CitizenTube team there, and Google for their help putting together the system that allowed thousands of people to submit questions and vote on them. It's certainly something we've enjoyed doing, and we look forward to doing again. So thanks, everyone, and have a good night.
Thanks.